We're now beginning the 26th chapter of 1 Samuel, and we're going to see that David's troubles from Saul here begin again. It seems that earlier, in the 23rd chapter, verse 19, David had found Saul asleep in the cave and had had an opportunity to put him to death. He didn't do that, but he spoke to Saul upon that occasion and showed Saul that he had spared his life and that he meant him no harm. And then in the 24th chapter of 1 Samuel, verse 17, Saul tells David that you're more righteous than I am. And it seems that Saul has there relented from pursuing David. Saul implies that he has made a change in his attitude toward David and that he no longer is going to do David harm. Yet David does continue to stay hidden out. But now we're going to find that Saul is going to change his mind and is again going to actively pursue after David to try to do him harm. So as we begin the first verse of chapter 26, "And the Ziphites came unto Saul to Gibeah, saying, Doth not David hide himself in the hill of Heshalah, which is before Jessimon?" Now these Ziphites had done this before. Earlier when David was in this area, they had come to Saul and told Saul where he was and encouraged Saul to go after him. And now here they come again. And apparently they feel like that they can no longer be in the good graces of David since they betrayed him so treacherously. So they're going to continue their actions in that area. And it may very well be that had they not come to Saul and encouraged him to go after David, that Saul might have ceased in his pursuing after David. But the fact that they've come and told him where David is, and are encouraging him to go after David, this seems to stir Saul up. And so Saul has the old enmity, the old hatred, the old desire to rid himself of the presence of David to come again. And so he decides to go after David. Verse 2, "Then Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph." So Saul takes a fairly formidable army with him, 3,000 men, just to get David. And David has about 600 men with him. So David would be very greatly outnumbered if they came into a situation where there'd be a pitched battle between the two groups. And we see then that Saul is again just as dangerous, just as treacherous as ever in his pursuit after David. Verse 3, "And Saul pitched in the hill of Heshalah, which is before Jessimon by the way. But David abode in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness." So Saul has pitched his camp. David is still hidden in the wilderness. Saul hasn't found him yet, but David knows where Saul is. "David therefore sent out spies, and understood that Saul was come in very deed." Now David knew the situation of Saul. He had spies who were spying upon the movements of Saul and able to give him some information about where Saul was and what he was doing. And so he knew that Saul was here indeed. It wasn't just a matter of hearsay. It wasn't just a matter of thinking that he might be going to come. They had spied Saul out. They knew that he was here. No question about it. "And David arose and came to the place where Saul had pitched." So now David comes into the very vicinity of where Saul's army is. And David beheld the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, the captain of his host, and Saul lay in the trench, and the people pitched round about him. So David goes right on into the camp, and or at least he goes close enough where he can see Saul laying in the trench. Some interpret this as in the chariot. But Saul is asleep. And then also Abner, the captain of his host, is there. And the people pitched around about him. There they all are in one group, but we're going to find that they're asleep. And this deep sleep that they seem to be in is probably not just some coincidental thing. It is probably the hand of God that is putting this great enemy of David into an inactive condition, the condition of sleep. And so we see how that God is able to disarm our enemies. He didn't have to use any great, miraculous, astounding act here. He just simply had them go to sleep. And many times, just the simple act of sleep will put a person in a very neutral condition so far as being able to do any harm is concerned. These people were a ferocious army, the very best that Saul could muster. But while they were asleep, they were powerless against David. And so David sees what the situation is. Verse 6, "Then answered David and said to Ahimelech the Hittite, and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother to Joab, saying." So now David asked two men. One, Ahimelech the Hittite. And Ahimelech apparently turns him down. Ahimelech doesn't go with him. He defers to the other man. And then the other person he asks is Abishai. Now this Abishai becomes a very faithful follower of David. We're going to see him involved in several aspects of the story of David. He does some things that are not right for him to do, but nevertheless he is a faithful follower of David. We don't know just how he does die. And he is the son of one known as Zeruiah. Now this lady, Zeruiah, is probably the sister to David, or at least maybe a stepsister to David, but many of the authorities consider her to be a sister. However, there is some reason to doubt that she might have been a true sister to David. And Zeruiah then was the mother of Abishai and Joab. She also had another son named Asahel, and these three sons, Asahel, Joab, and Abishai, were men who were very faithful to David, and they were prominent in the army of David. And since they were the son of Zeruiah, then they were actually nephews to David. So we see then David asking two men, Ahimelech and Abishai. Abishai is actually his nephew, saying, "Who will go down with me to Saul to the camp?" And Abishai said, "I will go down with thee." So he and Abishai are together as they go down to this camp of Saul. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster. But Abner and the people lay round about him. So here was Saul in this position of being asleep. All his people also seemed to be asleep. Abner, the captain of the army, even those who had been appointed to be the sentinel, those who were to be on guard, they were asleep, so that David and Abishai were able to freely move about, even to carry on a conversation, and to be undetected. And we have to think that this is the hand of God putting this great army of Saul's in a very inactive position, in a very vulnerable position, and letting them be at the mercy of David and Abishai. Saul had his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster being his pillow. So the spear was right there, real handy for Saul, but it was stuck in the ground, and he was ready to use it should the occasion arise. Then said Abishai to David, "God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him, I pray thee, with the spear even to the earth at once, and I will not smite him the second time." So Abishai makes this plea to David, "Let me kill Saul. God hath delivered him into your hand." This is a miraculous thing here that's been allowed by God. "Let me put him to death for you." He didn't tell David that he needs to do the job. David had refused this once earlier when he had Saul in the cave, you know. He could have put Saul to death then, but he didn't. And so Abishai realizes that David's not going to want to kill Saul, but he says, "Let me do it. I will kill him. Let me use this spear, and I will just have to hit him one time with the spear. Only one thrust is all I will need. I will not smite him the second time. Here's your opportunity, David. God has laid it all out for you. Now I take advantage of it." But let's notice David's attitude. "And David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" David gives several reasons why that they should not kill Saul. And the first reason he names is that he is the Lord's anointed. That is, God has anointed Saul to be king. He's still the king of the land. He has not in any wise been removed from that position, and it's not David's place to do it. As long as this ruler has authority, as long as he's been put there by God, then it's not David's place or man's place to make the change. When God gets ready for the change to be made, God will make the change. But at this point in time, Saul is the Lord's anointed, even though he's wicked. And so it is with the rulers that we have today. Those that have been put into a position of ruling over the nations, of ruling over the people, they're actually doing the Lord's bidding. And this is taught very plainly in the 13th chapter of Romans. They are the Lord's servants, even though they may be wicked. They may not even know the Lord, but they're carrying out His will on earth among the nations. And so it's not the duty of God's people to remove these rulers. It's not the duty of God's people to overthrow the nations. The church can exist in any nation. It can exist under any government. And this is God's plan for the church. And so it's not our place to overthrow God's anointed. And that's the way it is here with Saul. David realized that he wasn't to do this. And he further says, who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? He realizes there'd be a guilt placed upon him. And so David has more concern about whether or not he's going to be guilty than he does about his own personal safety. Sure, the safe thing would be to get rid of your enemy. Slay him. Get him out of the way. This would make it safer for David in the eyes of man, but it would also make David guilty. So to be free of guilt is more important to David than to slay Saul. And that's a very important lesson for us. We need to think about whether or not our actions are going to make us guilty, not a spur-of-the-moment thing to do, either to gratify our pleasure or to get revenge against an enemy. That spur-of-the-moment thing might be a great temptation for us, but we need to think, are we going to be guilty when we do it? If we're going to be full of guilt, then in the long run, we're going to come out loser. So David says that you can't smite the Lord's anointed and be guiltless. And then David said, furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him. Now the Lord's going to take care of this matter. He'd seen that happen in the case of Nabal. The Lord does get revenge. The Lord does avenge our enemies, the ones who do wrong against His people. And so he says, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die. If the Lord doesn't bring about a miraculous intervention and put him to death, he eventually is going to die a natural death. Maybe that's what God wants me to do, just wait for Saul to live out his life and die a natural death. Then I can be king. His day will come to die. Or he shall descend into battle and perish. There may be some other thing that'll intervene here. An event like a battle that he's going to be involved in that'll cause him to die. It's not my place to do this. It's not our place to put this man to death. The Lord will either put him to death, he'll die a natural death, or he'll die in battle. But it's going to be something that I am not actively doing to be made guilty of putting him to death myself. So the Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. David again affirmed, this is something that the Lord forbid that I do. But I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water and let us go. So he tells Abisha to take his spear that's there by his pillow and let's get his container of water and let's go. So David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster and they got them away and no man saw it nor knew it, neither awaked, for they were all asleep because a deep sleep from the Lord was fallen upon them. The Lord had placed this army in a state of deep sleep. David and his nephew were able to move freely about, to carry on a conversation, to take the spear and the water from Saul, his weapon that he was going to use to defend himself or to launch an attack with, and the water that he would use to refresh himself. These were taken from him. But they were able to do all this because the Lord had had a deep sleep fall upon them. And so I will say again, no matter how ferocious the enemies of God's people are, God has a way of disarming them. Just the fact that this army was in a deep sleep, just the fact that they were unable to even be aware of David's presence, rendered them absolutely helpless and at the mercy of David. But we see how great David was here. How honorably he deported himself. He didn't do anything against God. He committed no sin. He was tempted to. He had the opportunity to, but he didn't do it. Again, affirming the fact that it's the Lord's place to get vengeance upon our enemies. And David's going to allow that to happen in the case of Saul. Well, after having had this opportunity to take Saul's life and taking his spear and his water container that was right by the side of his pillow, David then left the immediate vicinity of Saul and the army. Then David went over to the other side and stood on the top of a hill afar off, a great space being between them. So David went to a far enough distance that he would be safe. The army couldn't get at him. They couldn't reach him with any of their weapons. And David cried to the people and to Abner, the son of Ner, saying, "Answerest thou not, Abner?" So David went over and on this other mountain, he called across to Saul and his army, and he was now addressing his speech to Abner, to the captain of the army. Now Abner was the one who was responsible for the king's safety. He was one who should have had a guard set there as a sentry to watch for any problems. Maybe he himself should have been watching. And as we know, they were all asleep. And even though this sleep was brought upon them by the Lord, David chides Abner for being lax in his duty. Then Abner answered us and said, "Who art thou that criest to the king?" And David said to Abner, "Art thou not a valiant man?" And this really means, are you not a man? Are you not somebody who is responsible and who has the ability to carry out the duties of a man? And who is like to thee in Israel? There's no one else that has the high position you have. No one else has the ability to lead the army like you do. You're very unique. Who's like to thee in Israel? And wherefore hast thou not kept thy lord the king? Why then did you not guard the king? Why were you so lax in this duty? Why did you allow the king to be put into such great jeopardy as he was? And he further explains to Abner, "For there came one of the people in to destroy the king thy lord." Of course, David was there. He came in to the presence of Saul. But also, he had Abishai, his nephew, with him. And Abishai was going to do the job for David so far as killing Saul goes. He offered to kill Saul himself, to thrust him through with the spear. So David says, "There's one of the people coming to destroy the king thy lord." Then he further says to Abner, "This thing is not good that thou hast done. As the Lord liveth, ye are worthy to die, because you have not kept your master, the Lord's anointed." So he just flatly tells Abner, "You're not worthy to live, Abner. You have committed an act here. You've been so lax in your duty that this is worthy of the death sentence. You've allowed someone to come in and threaten your Lord's life, the king, the Lord's anointed. You've been very lax in your duty. And here you come after me, you seek me like I'm some kind of a criminal, I'm condemned to die, but yet you yourself are worthy of death. You need to be put to death for being so slack." And now he says, "See where the king's spear is, and the cruse of water that was at his bolster, or right by his pillow. You see where these things are that were the king's possessions? I have them. They're now mine. I have taken them to prove to you that you've been slack in your duty and that the king's life was in jeopardy." And Saul knew David's voice and said, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" Now Saul hears what is being said. He recognizes David's voice. And he has the audacity to call David his son now. He's just given David's wife, Michal, to another man. He's seeking after David's life. He's trying to destroy David. And he says, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" We see how that those who are wicked many times have no sense of guilt, no feeling, no ability to size up the true terribleness of the situation. And David said, "It is my voice, my Lord, O King." So he still recognizes Saul as being the king, as being his Lord, as being his master in that sense. And he said, "Wherefore doth my Lord thus pursue after his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in mine hand?" So he proceeds to ask Saul, "Why are you still pursuing after me? What have I done wrong? What evil is in mine hand?" And you can see what a powerful position David has here, because he has just proven that he could have taken Saul's life. And he didn't. He spared Saul's life. He spared the man who's trying to kill him. And so he asked Saul, "Give me a reason. What evil have I done? What is your reason for pursuing after me? Now therefore I pray thee, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. Listen to what I have to say. Let's talk about this thing. Let's be reasonable. Hear me out. If the Lord hath stirred thee up against me, let him accept an offering. Now if it be that God has sent you after me, if it be that for some reason I have sinned and done wrong in the sight of God, and God has sent you after me to punish me, then if that be the case, let him accept an offering. Let me make peace with the Lord. Let me give him a sacrifice, something here to appease God, and let's get this matter cleared up. Let me take care of my sin. Let me repent. And let me make things right with God, and then you'll have no reason to come after me. But he says, if they be the children of men, cursed be they before the Lord. If it's some man that stirred you up, if it's the idea of those that are around you and advising you to send you after me, then let they be cursed before the Lord, for they have driven me out this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. They've not let me stay in this land of Israel. They've not let me stay in the inheritance of the Lord. That is God's holy land. They forced me to leave it. And as far as they're concerned, they're saying, go serve other gods. They want me to be beat out of my place to live, out of my land, and out of my religion. Of course, David well knew that it was Saul that was chasing him. It was Saul that was after him. It was Saul's idea. It was his hatred, his jealousy, his envy. But he's giving Saul an out here. He says, if it's somebody that's advising you to do this, let him be cursed, because look what they're doing to me. They're making me leave my land, and they're saying, in effect, we don't even want you in this religion. Go serve other gods. They're also saying, David, you can have more peace, more security, you can have life if you go live among the heathen like the Philistines. For the people of your religion, the people that seem to be following the true and living God, they want you to be annihilated. They want to kill you. They're chasing after you. And so in that sense, they're telling David to go serve other gods. So you see what a strong reasoning approach that David makes here to Saul. Asking Saul, what have I done? What wrong have I committed? Who sent you after me? Is it the Lord? Let's make an offering to him and reconcile ourselves to him. Is it other men that are doing this? Then let them be cursed because of this terrible thing that they're doing to me. And if Saul has any conscience at all, if he has any reasoning ability at all, this great plea that David makes is going to have a deep effect on the conscience of Saul. Well, we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.